everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Attendance Bias. I am your host, Brian Weinstein. If you've been active on the Fish Twitter community for any time at all, there is no doubt that you've come across today's guest, Lon Memo. Memo is the author of the blog The Daily Ghost, where he gives a fresh listen to every version of Ghost that Fish has ever played, and he is also the host of the Daily Soundcheck podcast, in which he gives some context of the band's history before playing not a show, but a soundcheck before any given show. On top of all that, Lon Memo is quite active on Twitter, especially late night, as he spreads his positive attitude to his followers on the Bird app. I first got in touch with Memo years ago when I wrote a blog of my own and interviewed him about The Daily Ghost. Since then, Fish and our respective projects have gone through many iterations, and Memo was gracious enough to appear today to talk about highlights from a fantastic show. That would be Stash and Soul Planet Into the Final Hurrah from August 31st, 2021 at the Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, California. In addition to these incredible jams, what I appreciated most about our conversation was the inherent excitement, the obvious passion that Memo has for Fish and their music. Although we haven't attended a show together, I came away from today's chat with the distinct feeling that Lon Memo is the type of fan you want to be jamming next to during a killer Fish show. But enough from me. Let's join Lon Memo to talk about getting back on tour in 2021, Elite Fish, and the kindness of strangers as we discuss highlights from August 31st, 2021 at the Shoreline Amphitheater. Memo, welcome to Attendance Bias. How are you?
Wonderful. Very happy to be here. Should be a lot of fun talking Fish. It's about my favorite thing to do, so I'm ready to roll.
Mine too, which is why we're here, which is why anyone listening is listening, I hope. You picked a relatively recent jam or a series of jams to discuss today, but we have a lot more than just the music. But to get it out of the way, you chose highlights from August 31st, 2021 at Shoreline, Stash, and then Soul Planet Into the Final Hurrah. But there's a lot more to talk about than that. There's your history, at least your persona as Lon Memo on Twitter. But I first learned about you when you ran a blog called The Daily Ghost, and now that you host a podcast called The Daily Soundcheck. So we have a lot to get into.
Sure.
Let's start at the beginning, at least as it started for me. What is or was The Daily Ghost?
Well, I was I started getting online about 2012. I found this website called turntable.fm. And a buddy of mine, well, he's a buddy of mine now. At the time, he was posting, he was like, we're listening to Fish shows in their entirety. Come in, everybody's listening. It's a great place to hang out. I saw like a fish.net post that he made. I jumped in there, pretty much never left for about 2 to 3 years. We made probably the greatest community I've been a part of. I'm still close with about 100 people from that website. Most of my group that I go to shows with at this point, I met through that website. So we were Fish nerds. We were all at a kind of interesting point in our lives. It's about 2012. Fish was really starting to get back in full swing, starting to expand on jamming. And we were just a group of people eating it up, getting super nerdy about it, talking about Fish all the time. And it was magical for me. So Ghost had always been my favorite song. I saw it at my first show in 97. And I thought it would be a cool exercise if I listened to every single one of them. So I put it out there in our chat, and some people said, you should write about it. You should make notes, and people would follow along. And I'm like, I might be the world's worst writer. I think this might be a terrible idea. So they all encouraged me. We had a really good group in there. One guy said he'd edit for me every single day. I had a guy make my website. I didn't know how to do any of that. The only thing I knew how to do was listen to Fish. So I just started plugging along. And I did one Ghost review every day, Monday through Friday, for about 6 months. I still can't believe I pulled it off. And that amount of work makes me want to cringe right now that I actually got that done.
But when it's something you love, it's not work, right?
You're right. But I still have a full-time job. And coming home after work some days is like, okay, I got to get down and write this. But it was really fun. I unearthed a bunch of gems that I personally didn't know. And, you know, all that works there. And we're running the Ghost bracket right now on Weekend Wook. And it's a nice resource to have to go back to. And It's great. I still have a lot of people like yourself that mentioned it to me, you know, to this day. And it was a really nerdy thing that I did, and people like nerdy fish.
Again, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what I come home to find someone who I know loves fish, to talk for an hour about a reason they love fish. That's why we're here.
Sure.
About Ghost, though, I'm curious. My first time seeing Ghost was not until 2003. It was on November 28th, 2003 at the Nassau Coliseum. And I had been seeing fish for about 6 years already at that point. I really enjoyed it. But my question to you is, what's a ghost that people listening may not be aware of that you consider up in the stratosphere, like a top five ghost that may not be a popular choice?
Boy, that's a good question. I would
come back
say,
to it if you want.
Okay, so I've got one.
Okay.
The 6/15/2000 Osaka Big Cat Ghost. We just did the ghost bracket. It got knocked out in the first round, but that ghost is unbelievable. It is one of the most uplifting ghosts you will ever hear. I think that there's a tendency for those Japan shows for people not to dig into because nobody was there. I mean, we're talking hundreds of people at most of those shows. So I think that most people listen back most of the time to shows they're familiar with, shows they went to. But that whole Japan run's incredible, and that ghost especially, unbelievable. So Big Cat, 6/15/2000, that's, if you've never heard that, get out.
And to add on to that recommendation, not just about the ghost, but about listening to that Japan 2000 run, the sound quality of every single recording is incredible.
Agreed.
The venues were just so small, although I know there was a festival appearance, that might have been 99 actually, but that every show was, like you said, hundreds of people. It wasn't like in 99 and 2000, you get used to these big, boomy audience recordings where you can never hear Paige, for example.
Sure.
Ever. This is a really good place to start if you're getting into fish late 1.0.
Well, let me help you segue.
Yeah, do it.
So if you want to get into this run of shows in 2000, the Japan run, if you go to my blog or my podcast, The Daily Soundcheck, probably the best episodes that we did. I was with Mr. Miner, Dave Colarco, and him and I are good friends. And we did a series of four different shows where he came on and we talked about individually all the sound checks from that run. And we get into detail about that entire run. Dave was there. We talk about, you know, his experience, what it was like to be in those rooms, what the experience was like in Japan. And we go super nerdy breaking down those incredible shows. So there's a little segue into the Daily Soundcheck.
Well, yeah, tell us about it. It sounds pretty obvious coming off the Daily Ghost. Now we're in a podcast called The Daily Soundcheck, but what is its premise?
The Daily Soundcheck came as a project that I wanted to make sure personally, kind of the same way I did with Ghost, that I'd heard every soundcheck Fish had ever done. Same thing. I thought it'd be cool to just play it. Everybody could check it out. I give a little historical background. And it morphed into the Daily Soundcheck, which is basically I play every single Fish soundcheck in history chronologically. And then I give a little context about the venue, the history of the venue, what was going on at the time. Sometimes I have people's shows experience and I simply play the soundcheck. So if you don't like a guy talking for an hour, this is no offense to you, but this is a common criticism I get for podcasts. I talk for 10 to 15 minutes usually, unless I'm interviewing somebody, right into the music. So we're all the way up to like 99, 2000. There's like 65, 70 episodes, and I'm going to start it back up here shortly. So soundchecks are just an amazing place to hear some of the craziest fish you'll ever hear and some of the best jamming too. So
I wanted to ask about that. I imagine that your pool of material must be a lot more shallow. Are fish soundchecks readily available as any show that you might think of?
There's probably 150.
Oh, wow.
You get, you know, early on you get, because basically they were setting up in 1989, 1990, there's nobody there. You just show up, put a mic up, boom, you're there. They go on stage. It's a whole different way that they used to come on stage than the way they come on now. And now sometimes, you know, they go to shows, you know, Dick's has a lot of sound checks because you can hear from the outside of the venue. So, you know, you get sound checks that way too. I think four or five came out this year. I saw some of them are incredible. So, you know, they're always popping up. So over the course of, you know, almost 40 years now, we got about 150.
And since today we're talking about a relatively recent jam from 2021, I want to try to ask you, Trey used to frequently say that one of the band's goals was, when they were jamming and improvising on stage, was to get so comfortable and playing with one another that it would feel like soundcheck, that they would play in a sense that ego-free, that they would play, because at soundcheck there is no audience. So they would play and reach a level of improvisation and joy in a weird way, as if there was no audience, as if they're just playing to make each other laugh, which is where the best stuff comes.
Sure.
That was often said in late 1.0. Like, I just rewatched Bittersweet Motel, and it's something that he said coming off the stage from The Great Went. Do you think that's still true in 2021 and 2022?
You know, one of the reasons I'm pulled to soundchecks and have such an affinity to make a podcast about it is I do feel that way. I feel like the looseness in soundchecks has come out some of my favorite jams of all time. You have like the Coventry soundcheck is unbelievable. Maybe my favorite jam that's not Radio City Ghost. You have, you know, the Bethel Waves that they've released. I mean, there's so many great, great jams that have come from soundcheck. And it definitely comes from a looseness. You know, no one's around. We could try whatever. We can stop it at any point if we don't like what's going on. I think having all that control leads to, you know, the incredible jams that we see in soundchecks.
And Momo, where could we find the Daily Soundcheck?
You can find it at thedailysoundcheck.com or any podcast platform that you get subscribed to. Except for Spotify, they kicked me out because I used some soundboards.
Those motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's all right.
All right. Well, Memo, we've heard about you as a professional. Those of you at home, I'm using air quotes, professional such as it is. But let's hear about you as a fan with the Attendance Bias Lightning Round.
Attendance Bias Lightning Round.
So you referenced this a little bit earlier, but didn't get specific. Memo, when was your first Phish show and what do you remember from it?
So my first Phish show was December 11th, 1997 at the Rochester War Memorial. Funny that you watched Bittersweet Hotel because the first half an hour was recorded at my first show. The Roses Are Free. They do a lot of it in that show that or in that movie. And I remember I had probably been listening to Phish for about 2 years at the time. I was 17 when I went to my first show. My buddy's brother was into Phish a little bit before us. He gave me a copy of Lawn Boy, which I listened to on CD. I can't believe this is how we used to listen to Phish. It's so crazy to think about now. And then I got into Hoist quite a bit. That was given to me. And I was listening to anything I get my hands on, went to my first show. And certainly the thing that was my it moment was the third song was Maze. And it's a very, very incredible version where Trey just read, and I was blown away. I had never seen anybody play guitar like that. At that point, I was just young, eating up music. And I just loved everything about it. I remember Roses Are Free being debuted at that show and nobody knew what it was. Not a single, everyone's like, do you know what this is? No, I have no idea what this is. And, you know, it becomes such an important part of Phish's catalog to come. And then so many people got into Ween because of that. It was kind of a cool moment. I mean, what's funny is, the third song was Maze. My favorite jam of that show is the Down With Disease, which is in the two hole, but I didn't appreciate it at the time because I was just this young 17-year-old kid that just wanted to see hard, fast music as fast as I could.
Well, Maze will do that.
Yeah.
Maze will fill that void should you need it.
Yep.
What was the most recent Phish show that you've seen and what did you think of it?
I was at the most recent Dick's Run. I've been to every Dick's Run. That's one of my cooler stats. It's my like fair place to go see Phish. I thought Dick's was good along with most of summer. I was hoping maybe take a step further this summer. I thought every show was good to the most part, just never really turned the corner to like elite Phish is how but everything was good. I mean, and I have a blast at every show I go to. So it's, you know, I'll continue to go to every show I can go to. I promise you that.
For all the different quirks and vocabulary and like subculture pieces that come through the Phish arena, I do think the phrase average great is the best one.
It's a good one.
In the way that you're talking about this Dick's Run, when you said you were kind of hoping it would get to that elite version, it's like they're already great.
Right.
it's just we all understand what we mean when we say, yeah, we, you know, it was good. It was great. We all know that it was better than 99% of other shows you could be seeing on any other Labor Day weekend. If you had your choice to place yourself anywhere in any given venue, where in a venue do you like to be during a show?
I think it's called the sweet spot, and it's called that for a reason. That would be right where the soundboard is. The sound and lights from that vantage point is as good as it gets for me.
If you could time travel to any Phish moment in their history, whether it's on stage or off stage, where and when would you go?
I feel like if anybody says anything other than Big Cypress, they're out of their mind. So besides Big Cypress, because I feel like that is so far and away the answer for everybody. I know for me, my favorite personal moment would be Chilling Thrilling. The moment in that arena, the energy when Chilling Thrilling was happening was something I will never forget. It was everybody hearing a musical costume for the first time simultaneously, and every note was sick. The production was off the charts, the chandeliers, the stage. It was unbelievable. And I would go back and do that every second of every day. That show was awesome.
You know, I thought the encore was one of the most important parts of that show. The, is this what you wanted?
Yeah.
You know, and I really mean that because I'm so interested in the band fan dynamic and how much we as fans put into, or how much we assume they, what they mean, quote unquote, when they play something, or why are they doing something? It was certainly a reaction to Wingsuit in 2013. Yeah. Right. So when you bring up Big Cypress, it's funny because I've never had to sit through my own lightning round, and thank God for that. But my answer is always, I want to be a fly on the wall. I want to be there for a conversation. I want to be there when they decided that they were going to play Remain in Light, what the conversations were like for the Clifford Ball.
Sure.
You know, it's, to me, it doesn't seem to be on stage. I'm almost more interested in the off stage. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way my brain works.
I have that interest too, but I really like seeing the music. So I'm going to, so I might stick with my answer, but I totally get, I eat up all the interviews. I read everything, but boy, there's still nothing like being there in the moment, man.
Well, fine. You go enjoy your music then.
Okay. I will.
Overall, all things considered, pound for pound, indoor fish or outdoor fish?
I think if I have the choice, indoor fish for sure. The history is, you know, you can't hold a candle to it. Fish, indoor music. You take all the indoor fish versus outdoor fish, indoor smokes. Two sets of lights. All the elements are perfect every time you go in. You know, you don't have to worry about rain or cancellations or anything like that. It's indoor fish is awesome. That being said, on a beautiful day with a beautiful night at the right venue outdoor, it's magic. There's exceptions to my rule for sure. Now, if you could tell me up front, it's going to be 70 degrees with no sun in my face and the light and the sun's going to go down a little bit earlier. So we got a lot of lights and I got a nice venue. And it's not overcrowded. If you can tell me that, I'll pick outdoor. But that doesn't happen all the time.
What is your favorite post-show snack?
So there's no hunger in this world I've experienced like edibles, which I eat very often. So I eat every snack. So anything you put in front of me after a show, I will devour. But pretty much I'll go to my go-to, which I'm pretty known for, and that's cheese and crackers.
Nice. That's a good answer. You're classy.
I'm so classy. Boy, a guy in a helmet is the classiest guy at Fish Show for sure. That's all people ever say. That memo guy, man, he's classy.
What is the weirdest thing you've ever seen at a fish show?
The weirdest thing I've ever seen at a fish show is a good question. I like that one. In 2012, I was at Dick's and I thought I forgot my wallet at the time. And pretty much at that point, it had everything I had in it. Like, I had to fly home, had my license, passport, all that stuff. And I was freaking out in the middle of the show. So I convinced security to let me leave the venue, go to my car to try to find it. They were so nice about it. So I had to go through Shakedown to get to my car. And let me tell you, the weirdest thing I've ever seen is shakedown during a show.
I have to ask you to expand on that, because one year, I think it wasn't Phish, to be fair. It was at Bonnaroo. And I think it was 2004. I got up to pee in like the middle of the night, and I had to walk near shakedown to get to the porta potties.
Sure.
And man, shakedown at like 3:30 a.m. There's a scene in The Wire.
Yeah.
If you've ever watched that show?
I have.
Where Bubbles gets up, and it's when Hamsterdam, when all the drugs are legal, and he walks down the street and he looks around, and even this guy, this recovering addict, is like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, and this is his home. That's how I felt.
For sure.
So what was shakedown like during
the
show?
It was just like ghost town, but then there's just people spinning. I mean, dicks were shakedown, and there's so much air. That place is huge. So like, it was just like people spun out. Just weird, dude. It was like a demented carnival is how I'd describe it.
When was this show played?
The summer of 2021, when today's show was played, was really strange, I think. I think everyone had a different comfort level when going to shows. People didn't know how they would feel when they got there. People were excited yet hesitant. And so there's a lot to say about this. This show, August 31st, 2021, was the last show of the tour before Dix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always consider Dix, yeah, it's part of the summer tour, but it's not.
Sure.
You know, it's like its own thing.
Agreed.
So this was the last show of the summer tour at Shoreline. And just to telescope out the route of the tour, it was made up of 22 shows beginning in Arkansas. It moved across the Southeast, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee. It moved a little bit north to Deer Creek, 3 shows in the Midwest. After Deer Creek, the band went back east for 5 shows, 2 in Hershey, 3 in Atlantic City. Those were the only 3 that I saw that year. And the tour culminated on the West Coast with 3 shows at the Gorge, big year for the Gorge, and these 2 in Shoreline in Northern California before moving over to Dix. How are you feeling about going back to Phish when this was still the pandemic, but it was kind of like diet pandemic? It was like we lived through the worst. I think that was the feeling. Maybe I'm projecting, but still getting together in large crowds was a little bit, I don't know. I live in New York City, so things were a little super sensitive here. We got pretty conditioned that everyone is dangerous in 2020. How did you feel going to large crowded shows in the summer of 2021? Do you remember?
Sure. I mean, it was certainly one of the weirdest times to be a Phish fan, I think, especially those early shows. I don't think anybody really knew what to expect. You know, we had been, you know, most of us haven't gone to, you know, our local shows because those weren't even happening. So you weren't even seeing shows. You know, you're in Queens, you know, all the shows in New York, there wasn't much going on. There wasn't much going on here in Buffalo. So the take the leap to go to a 15,000 person venue was a little uneasy for everybody, but I feel like we felt good. I wore masks for the first bunch of shows, you know, even though I work in a restaurant without a mask at that time. So like I'm around people all the time, but I thought it was the responsible thing to do at the time. And, you know, but then it slowly, everybody became more comfortable. You remembered what it's like to go to Phish, like that feeling of being relaxed, and people wanted to feel that. So I, you know, the mask started to come down show by show, I think, and everybody became more comfortable, but it was still, you know, just an interesting time. Nobody really knew. People did get sick. I remember a lot of people getting sick after Atlantic City. I felt like I read a bunch. And so, you know, it was a crazy time. I can't believe it's so weird that happened in our lifetime like that.
It's something that, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's something that anyone who lived through it will remember for the rest of their lives.
Sure.
The only thing I could compare it to is 9/11 is the only other event where you could really draw a line. Things were different before this and then after this.
Yeah,
that's how I felt. I only went to the Atlantic City shows, and that was wonderful because it was outdoors and mm-hmm. it felt like there was less risk. It was enormous. So you could go all the way to the back, and they had it perfectly where there was these PA speakers. Well, you didn't have to. I mean, you never have to see the band, but you didn't have to be up close to really feel involved in the show. And so my friends and I stayed pretty far back, but we felt like we were still part of it.
Sure.
and it was wonderful. Those Atlantic City shows made me feel more normal than anything had. I'm also a teacher, so all these changing rules almost day to day and this instability for an entire school year, this was a huge release.
Sure.
To be in Atlantic City. But this is about you. This is your episode.
No.
About looking musically at the summer 2021 tour. I remember that the influx of new songs was the biggest thing, other than the worry about COVID, right? You kind of put them in different pockets. I never needed you like this before. It became a big monster. Mull became a lot of people's favorite. You know, it kind of showed up and disappeared. Evolve, A Wave of Hope, Casual Enlightenment, and Lonely Trip is the one that kind of stuck around, I think, as a lot of people's heart. And there was also the silly but passionate arguments of whether or not this counts as 3.0 or 4.0. You know, it was nice to get back to something that was so silly, but so serious in our hearts. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There were also a ton of great jams. We're going to talk about arguably the best one of the summer in about 5 minutes. My interpretation is that these jams were much more group-centered and slow-build. They were somewhere between 2019's micro-jamming and 2022's space rock and roll. Like, it kind of built up a little bit, but then it became like there's no one star. It was true democratic jamming. But other than that, it's almost too recent for me to develop any sort of perspective.
I have big memories of this whole tour. I did quite a bit of it, and I think they crushed it, to be honest. I was preparing for this. I'm going back to the shows I saw and go, I mean, there's monster jams from that summer. Alpharetta had the huge Chalk Dust, the huge Tweezer. Nashville's, the second night of Nashville's second set is awesome. Deer Creek has like two of the best jams of this era in back, almost back-to-back songs. Blaze On, Simple. I mean, huge. We've got Everything's Right from Deer Creek. I mean, Hershey too. You talk about Lonely Trip. That's one of my favorite shows. Hershey was the first two I saw that summer. And Hershey too, from start to finish, is one of the most unique shows I've ever heard. Flow all the way. And the debut into Lonely Trip was incredible, where they placed that.
Who were you that led you to see so many shows? Like, were you saving up for this? Did you have all these tickets from summer 2020?
Good question. I had some of them for sure. And then I got my other ones. Summer's usually a little bit slower at where I work, so I'm able to take some time off, and I just try to jam it all into the calendar as much as I can. Hit up the friends, where are you going? And then we just start making plans and we start going.
And finally, why do you have attendance bias toward these highlights from this show, August 31st, 2021 at Shoreline?
So, Shoreline, what an interesting way that the entire thing shook down. So I went to the Gorge, which was right before that. I love the Gorge. I cannot believe that people are so old now. I'm 42. They're like, I can't go to the Gorge. I can't camp. I'm too old for that. I'm like, it's the most beautiful venue in the world. And you camp there and you party all night. It's so freaking fun. I love the Gorge. I will probably never miss it again. So went to the Gorge. While that was happening, I flew from Buffalo all the way to Seattle.
Wow. A
long flight. And while that was happening, if you remember, there was the wildfires going on in Tahoe. So I had never been to Tahoe. It was something I wanted to do. And it was right in between dicks. So I could go to the Gorge, Tahoe, dicks, hit all that, and then fly back home to Buffalo. So that was the plan. But all this was happening while I was trying to make plans to go to the Gorge. So it was like 1 minute, we're like, okay, I think we're going to try to do it. Next minute, we're like, there's no way. Everyone is being evacuated out of there. Something's going to happen. So I remember distinctly, I was in Seattle the day before we were going to go to the Gorge, went out to a nice dinner and bar with a couple of my buddies. And I was pretty drunk that night, I'm not going to lie. And we're sitting there having a couple beers. Boom, my phone goes off. Fish changing venues, going to Shoreline, California. So I have to reroute all of my flights, figure out where I'm going to stay, all that while I'm plastered drunk, leaving for the Gorge the next day. And a good friend of mine, Brian Ford, he's fast enough on Twitter, called me and he goes, Memo, I will pick you up from any of the three airports near there. He goes, you just let me know, tell me when, and I will pick you up. And I'd never met Brian before at that moment. We'd only interacted on Twitter. And while all that was happening, a couple of my other friends booked a new Airbnb, canceled the old Airbnb, booked a new one. And it was all done for me. I didn't have to do anything but drink more beer. All I had to do was change a flight. And it turned out to be the best experience probably I've had. I mean, there's a couple in that are certainly up there, but we booked an Airbnb that was two houses. The listing came with two houses, one house and then another house. And we had about, I think we had 8 to 10 people, and we decided we were going to make one house the party house and one house was the quiet house.
You know, when I was in during 2.0, similarly, right, we're close enough in age where we would sometimes rent out two hotel rooms, depending on how many people were on the road with us. And we would do the same thing. One room was the party room. We'd fill the bathtub up with ice and put all the drinks in there. And one room was the go back and sleep room.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that as Fish has evolved, so have we as fans, that now it's not, we've graduated from hotel rooms. We're not in the Hilton anymore. Now it's entire houses.
Yeah, it was amazing. The whole dynamic of it was so funny. I went with probably four or five people I was really close with. And then I met four or five people for the first time. And the blending of, you know, the people I knew with the people I had never met before and how it all came together over the course of those 2 days is something incredibly special to me. So I have fond memories of the way it worked out, meeting those people. I've done a million shows with them since then. And, you know, the bonding experience we had, let alone, you know, going to Shoreline, GA venue, that was really cool. Everybody seemed to go last minute. Great, great amount of people that I met during those two shows. So that whole experience between bonding with the people at the two houses and then the shows that they played, when it comes together like that, it's hard not to think about it all the time. It's the perfect union of people and music.
Hi, everybody. Brian here to welcome you to the set break of today's episode of Attendance Bias. First, thank you for listening. And second, just a quick reminder to tell you that even though Attendance Bias comes to you for free, it does take a lot of work and it does take quite a bit of money to keep the lights on here at production. So I just wanted to ask a small favor if you could support the podcast in any number of the following ways. If you could leave a review or a rating of it on whichever podcast app you use. If you could spread the word, telling a friend or someone you think may be interested in it about it. Or probably the most concrete way is to go to www.buymeacoffee.com/attendancebias and donate however much you can financially to help with the continuing costs of Attendance Bias. So thank you again so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the second half of today's episode. Well, let's dig deep into it. So you chose, instead of an entire show, segments from the show. And for anyone listening who's unfamiliar with the show, that doesn't mean three songs that are each 4 minutes long. This is the length of a set, what we're going to talk about here. So you chose Stash, which is from the first set, and then an unbelievably dense and beautiful jam that goes into a segue, Soul Planet into the final hurrah. So let's start with Stash, which is in the first set. So it's a little more than halfway through what I wrote, and I'm a middle school teacher, so this is as hip as I get. A little more than halfway through a banger of a set. That's my vocabulary. Sure. I'm cool like the kids now.
Mm-hmm.
It's after I never needed you like this before, and before Way, which I haven't heard in years and years and years. So this set already featured rarities and fan favorites like Glide, Colonel Forbin, Banter from Trey, and a very beautiful performance of If I Could. So we're due for a big jam. This is already an all-time set before Stash even peeks its head around the corner.
Yep.
How are you feeling about this point?
I mean, I'm coming off having this, meeting all these people, having this fun time. Kind of funny story about how my friends work is my really good buddy, Brendan. He was with me. All of a sudden, the show's about to start. He just like whispers to us that it's his birthday. So we're like, oh, happy birthday, my good friend Jackie Cap. She carries around the family bag. She's like, freaks out. She's got emergency birthday supplies. She starts putting
emergency happy birthday supplies,
happy birthday stuff all over him. He's covered head to toe in all these birthday stuff that she just has just in case something like this happens. It was the funniest thing ever. And boom. So that was funny for pre-show. We get into it. And then the set, like you said, is fantastic. You know, we're in this weird, you know, 24 hour, basically we change venues. You know what? You always dream that something like this could happen. Like when something crazy is happening like this, like they change venues or it's a one-off or, you know, the sleeper show type of thing. I feel like the sleeper show has not happened in a long time. This one is Gorge to Dix. So this was in the sleeper category, all this weird stuff from Tahoe. People had to change all their plans. And what did Phish do? They come out, they play Forbidden, Mockingbird, If I Could, Glide, Way, all this stuff that is very rare, but centered in there is what we're talking about, is the Stash. And the Stash, to me, I re-listened to this a couple times. At the time, it blew me away. It was unbelievable. I think the more I listen to it, it might be the best representation of what 2021 sounded like, in my opinion.
Well, it, what do you mean by that? Because there's, I noticed, and I have to ask forgiveness for any listeners who are gearheads, because my vocabulary will fail me, because there's so many weird sounds and synthesizer effects throughout this whole jam. It starts, and Fishman, I noticed, is especially jazzy. I really love how he plays in this Stash. But immediately there's an odd tone, and I wrote an odd tone taken by Trey, ? Because I can't tell who's playing what at certain points. They're kind of crossing each other. They cross the streams, basically. At 6:45, there's like a Stern synthesizer, like Benteke teases. I can hear the piano in the background, but it's out of control, and it's only 2 minutes into the jam.
For sure. So Stash had kind of lost its luster for a long time in this era, and it has come back with a vengeance. And there's, you know, four or five consecutive versions where Phish really, really takes Stash in interesting directions. This is my personal favorite. This one, you know, like you said, you're wondering about Trey's tone. I think that 2021 was defined by Trey's new Trainwreck amp, the clean precision sound that he got from that, and all the effects that he started using. And he really locked in during the pandemic with the practice. He really got his rig ready to roll for 2021. And he experimented all over the place. And jams benefited from that. All these weird sounds, he can't play the amount of notes that he used to, but he can do this. He's got these different sounds, and he's got technology. And the way that he mixed that with traditional Phish jamming is evident all over that summer, in my opinion. That's what I remember about what 2021 sounds. And when you listen to Stash, it's all over the place. You've got the computer noises, you've got the demented sounds, you've got all of that, and it works seamlessly. It doesn't, it just, from the first note, like you said, it doesn't take long to get into this jam, and all of it flows beautifully. There's no right hand turn of any, it just all works in this crazy weird way, and it was breathtaking to see.
glad you brought up the computer sound specifically. I wrote at 14 minutes, no, at 12 minutes, I wrote, are we in the middle of a Pac-Man game?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote Mars Attacks sound effects. That was sure. The best way I could think of it.
Sure.
And there were parts where I thought the Marimba Lumino was being played. I wasn't able to view this jam. It was only what my ears were telling me. And when you put those two sorts of questions back to back, you know something is going on. I don't hear any guitar, and it's sort of a percussive effect.
Sure.
And so is it the percussionist or is it the guitarist who's making that happen? I don't know. The bottom drops out, and then it kind of becomes more of a traditional stash. At about 17 minutes, I wrote in capital letters, this is what people talk about when we split out platitudes about fish, quote, keeping things fresh 40 years in.
Yeah.
This band doesn't sound like, at this point of this jam, they don't sound like any other time they've ever sounded like in their 40-ish year history.
I think that's a great point. And I think that the more you get into Fish and the nerdier you get, that's the stuff that moves you. And so this is a prime example of that, in my opinion. It definitely doesn't sound like a lot of things, but it's still cool as hell. And that's what we look for.
And in 2022, they kind of did that with You Enjoy Myself, where they added that jam or added it back, depending on your perspective. But they are kind of reinventing one of their oldest songs. And Stash has been around since, what, 1989 or 1990?
Sure.
And so it makes it thrilling and fresh for guys like you and I. And depending on who you talk to, we didn't get into Fish that early. In 1997, they weren't new.
Sure. Sure.
But everyone knows Stash. But if you hear this, maybe you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next jam that you wanted to bring up that was part of your attendance bias is the second set opening, Soul Planet, on December 12th, 1999. It was one of my first shows, maybe my seventh or eighth show. Fish opened the second set in Hartford with a 35-minute version of Drowned.
Mm-hmm. And know it, for sure.
Yeah, it's taken me... what is it, 21 years now? I can't do math. 20-ish years, 22 years. I still haven't deconstructed it. And this Soul Planet reminded me of that. This is dense graduate level Fish.
It's, I mean, we can get into it however you want. It's as good a jam as I've ever seen, easily.
Well, let me ask you this, before we get into it, because I do have timestamps. What is your take on Soul Planet?
I was never the full hater of Soul Planet that some people were. I thought the first time I heard it was catchy as hell. I was singing it all around. And I mean, I'm a pretty uplifting and happy, positive guy. So I can get behind it. I think the guitar lick is pretty dope, actually. You know, it's not like Tweezer, but it's fine for me. And I saw an amazing Soul Planet at Alpharetta. The most recent run there were those, you know, they had the Ghost that was there and the Tweezer there. And that Soul Planet on the second night is fantastic. And it sounds nothing like this one. Like that is this airy, almost like Lemon Wheel Ghost kind of sounding type of jam where this is just its own monster. So I just like any kind of song that can find a spot to do what this jam does. It doesn't really matter to me what the first 4 or 5 minutes sound like. I have my preferences. I care what kind of jams come out of the composed section. That's what matters for me. That's what I like about Fish. I'm a jam guy.
And so this is one of them. This is one of it.
So what makes this interesting is you do have a popular kind of opinion. There's probably half the people in the crowd, I would say, that moan when Soul Planet gets played here to start. You have an incredible first set like we talked about. You have rarities. You've got, you know, an incredible Stash jam. A great first set by anyone's standard. We all loved it. So everybody's pumped, ready to roll. boom, some Soul Planet starts the second set. Audible moan. Oh.
It's backwards down the number line in 2009.
Right. So
we've seen it before.
What's I think is interesting and funny to me. This is, you know, you say your brain works. I like this kind of stuff. Okay, we get this audible moan. Okay, here we go. Soul Planet. We play it. 47 minutes later, they take an audible moan into one of the greatest Phish jams of all time. And that's why I love this band.
According to the Phish.net jam charts, this is their third longest jam of ever. Their career. Yeah.
Yep.
But let's dig in. So the jam starts at about 4.5 minutes. It's clear that Trey, at least, if not the rest of the band, because I think he's leading this, at least in the beginning, he's interested in pushing this. And he has these escalating guitar lines. It was a little hard to hear Paige on the audience recording, but he comes back with a vengeance a little later. There's picking and plinko and kind of generic searching at the beginning. I think that a lot of Soul Planet jams begin like this, where Trey does this, what is it, an echoplex that he used a lot in 2015, where it's kind of, or a delay. And he just kind of lets the space go. He hits a chord and it's like, dun, 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 and it fades away while the rest of the band, usually Mike, comes in. And around 8.5 minutes is when my guitar vocabulary completely failed me. I couldn't explain. I wrote, and quote, like a soft delay effect that guides the melody, but doesn't have the attack like most of his playing. To me, it's what musical leadership sounds like, because the other band members haven't really changed their playing. But Trey is changing it up, to your point earlier about his effects and his practice.
Sure. I think the first, there's a couple, I want to put one little piece of background to go with kind of why I chose this show is in meeting people. Wonderful individual on Twitter, Lindsay Clare, was at the show with me. It's the first time I had ever met her. We had long talked about our love for Evil Phish. That's going to rear its head a little bit further down.
Oh, sure.
So it was the first time we ever saw a show together. She's standing next to me, and I had full moment of what an incredible show buddy. So one of my favorite feelings, kind of not related to how technical we're going to get into the music, is when you find a show buddy that's next to you that you vibe with. You're on the same wavelength. Maybe you don't talk. Maybe you dance about the same. You smile the same way. Lindsay Clare and I hit it off to a T. So in the middle of this jam, 47 minutes later, our friendship went from, that's pretty cool, to holy crap, we're best friends in the middle of 47 minutes. It's amazing how a Phish show or a jam can accelerate the bonding experience between two people. Some one of my favorite things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It makes you band of brothers.
Absolutely. So, you know, I have a lot of friends that don't see Phish and we're very close and we talk all the time, but man, it's just not the same as the people you see Phish with and that experience you share with them.
And a jam like this, or even the first set, I would argue, you've been through something. You've gone on a journey.
Sure.
Not to cheese it up too much, but you really have, because you don't know what's coming next, but you're still traveling forward. There were a number of times in this jam. One time I wrote at about 14 minutes that it was quieting down. If I were there, I would think that this jam was looking to end or a new song to play. I thought it was going to be over about four different times.
Sure. think that's interesting. I like to go off of that a little bit. Is my last couple listens, I listened to three or four times. I mowed the lawn. It was 70 degrees, Buffalo today. It was a beautiful day. I had this jam going a couple times. And what is really sticking out to me every listen is just how incredible John Fishman is.
Yeah.
As good as Trey's incredible in this too. And we could talk about him, but the whole jam does not even come close to happening without Fishman. He goes from attack to ripping to just these small little feels. And he takes those little transitions where maybe the jam might end. And there's, like you said, three or four different parts where that could happen. But his ability to find the right rhythm to bridge section to section is what makes him the greatest drummer on planet Earth. And he forces it. Trey hears it. He's like, I can't change this jam now. It's too good. Look at what he's doing. I can play off this. This is a whole new opportunity for me to try something different. And he's the glue to this whole thing. Not to mention, I feel like I would have 5 heart attacks if I tried to play drums that hard for 47 minutes. It's unbelievable that he can keep it up the way he does. He is a damn gift to this community, John Fishman.
You will not find any argument or talk back on any of those statements from this side of the microphone. But about a little more, well, not even, a little less than halfway through, synthesizers start showing up. Around 17 minutes. That's what really tweaks my ear. I think since maybe it was 2015 or 2016 when I Always Wanted It That Way debuted,
sure.
I think it was at Charleston. I'll have to double check that. But in my head, you know, the band has used synthesizers before, dating back to 96 and 97, maybe even earlier than that. But I feel like this is a much more mature way to use it. And they start bringing it in at 17 minutes to the point where a couple of minutes later, Trey reminds us with his screaming through space quotes. Oh, wait, sure. Yeah, this is Soul Planet.
Sure. So I'm going to backtrack real quick. I kind of jumped ahead a little bit, but there is a section that I did want to highlight, which is around the 8-minute mark. And it's some of, you know, in these big, long jams, a lot of times I find like the 20-minute mark to be like a cutoff, which is funny because my license plate is 20 minute jam. So, anything usually at like these big monster jams, the ones that go 30 minutes, a couple that go 40 at 20 minutes, there's like this cutoff point where it's like, okay, this is a jam we're used to. And then from the 20 minute mark to let's say 25 minutes, I find often some of the best fish that's ever been played is right at that moment. So I fully expected when I went back on my re-listen to find that. And actually, that's not even true with this jam a little bit. So this jam is a little bit more unique. I think there's 2 sections that are incredible. And it's the first one's at 8 minute. It's about 8 to 13 minutes. Trey finds this effect that's like kind of spacey and haunting, but still blissful. And it's the leads that he plays over top of it. I remember every note. So that's what I think modern day Trey can do when he's right. He plays leads that are memorable. He understands space better than old Trey. He may not be able to play as many notes, but he understands what notes he can play and the effect that they have on them. Ruby Waves at Alpine is an excellent example of just great different leads. and things that you remember. So I know from this 8 minute mark to 13 minute mark, I could hum you everything that he plays. And that's what I love in a jam, where I can remember, if it's not playing, I'm walking around the house, I'm humming it. Every note I'm singing around the house, doing my chores. That's what a jam is, my favorite. When there's a section that's so incredible, there's a lead so good from him that I can't stop singing it. And that moment, that the effect that he uses is incredible. The way the band gets, it's just breathtaking. So there's a section there that I really love. So if you want to really dive into this jam, kick it up at about the 8 minute mark.
What's the second section?
That's much later. So I didn't know if you wanted to talk a little bit later. So
no, that's fine. I wrote that there's a major key progression by about 23 and a half. Like things are starting to, like you said, at that 20 minute mark that there's a division.
Yes.
This is it, in my opinion. And I loved it. And then again, at 25 minutes, we get to that, oh, it's ending again. But then there are these odd effects being played. The Phish.net jam charts describes it as alien distress signals.
Sure.
That has to be it.
Yeah, I mean that moment live, that was Evil Phish, as evil as it gets. There's 2 or 3 minutes. I looked over at Lindsay right next to me and I just said, this is basically a nightmare at this point.
Yeah.
And she was loving that quote and we laughed and it was bonkers. I mean, it went from this beautiful, haunting, you know, section that I just talked about to kind of ride that out. And then at the 20 minute mark, as you talk about, they go full bonkers, full rip every effect we have, get out there, let's see what can happen. And it gets haunting and crazy. They did a little bit of this kind of with the Deer Creek Simple. It's kind of the first time I really thought I heard sounds like this before, earlier in the tour. And it shows up again in this Soul Planet, and then it would show up at Dick's a couple of days later when they go into the machine type of thing. That section's incredible. And live, it blew me away. I'm like, this is awesome.
I would be scared to death if I were on anything. I would dig a hole in the lawn and just hide under there until the show is over. I don't know. It's so dissonant. It's so against what you expect to hear, even at the craziest part of a Phish show.
I also love, you know, right around in that section, like you mentioned, they do bring it back into Soul Planet. But it's one of the things that they've been doing lately is finishing songs like Ghost. They go back to the composed part instead of leaving them unfinished. That's a huge thing they've been doing the last couple of years. And a lot of times it is rough. It is a weird transition that I don't know if I love all the time, but the way that they float into Screaming Through Space, it's almost like it's part of the jam where it's not this forced transition. They take the jam, it eases back into, you hear Screaming Through Space, it's nice and calm, and then it's back into attack mode. It was so cool the way they did it.
Well, the screaming through space is almost like a sprinkle of cinnamon. They don't go back into Soul Planet.
Right.
They do it a lot with Cross-Eyed and Painless, too.
Right, right.
You know, and that when Trey, quote, still waiting,
sure.
when you're nowhere near musically Cross-Eyed and Painless,
that's yes,
the same
yes.
thing with screaming through space. And it's like, oh, right, that's my tether to reality. This
sure,
started
sure.
somewhere.
Sure.
And by about 34 minutes, and by the way, we still have almost 20 minutes left.
I know.
it's back to the beginning. Like, to me, I don't know if you would agree with this, but around 34 minutes, I wrote that it goes back to the beginning. It's a little more meandering, more or less straightforward playing by the band. Like, let's get our druthers together. Let's get our bearings here. But again, there's a lot of fun echoing between Trey and Mike. This is what the beginning of most jams sound like toward this
sure.
part when they're searching. And then it gets weird again 10 minutes later. And by the end of the whole jam, my only note is, this is what I want all jams to sound like.
So I think that what makes the back half of this jam interesting is the smoothness that they go from the really haunting space computer noises, nightmare section, the way that they go from that into this is my second section that I really like, is about, it's almost 36 minutes in. It's like mm-hmm. 35, 44. They go from this haunting thing. And this is again, a testament to the brilliance of John Fishman, the way that he takes where they are in this weird space station to this beautiful second part of this jam. There's not drummers that do this. You have to have feel and trust and know that you know what you're doing. It's so hard to do. And he blows me away how it happens. The other thing that happens in these monster jams, and it happens, is there's usually right-hand turns in a long 40-minute jam where basically they ride out an idea. All right, new idea. Boom, we're going to that. And it's like a huge transition. I think this, the way that the Soul Planet bleeds together over these 47 minutes mm-hmm. is incredible. Like the way that it doesn't sound like a start and a stop transition between that crazy program computer noise thing to this second blissful section, the way that they move through that is brilliant. And I really, really enjoy that. That will show up in the Everything's Right at Dick's a couple of days later also. But they get into, it's about 35, 44, I've kind of written down. And Trey switches to this another interesting lick and tone. And I have it almost like it's got like a Old West feel, like folky Old West tone to it. And it's another brilliant lead where it's just, every time I hear it, it's so cool and so memorable that it blows me away.
I'm going to have to listen to it yet again. Because when you described as Old West feel, my description was a perfect combo of a solid rhythm and ethereal ambient sounds on the outside of the musical nucleus, which does not sound like Wild West. It doesn't sound like those two things.
I don't know if that's my best description ever, but I get that it just feels like that, like almost like you're riding out into the sunset. Like maybe you were driving a car into, you know, a sunset in a huge open road in front of you. And if somebody was behind you playing a guitar, that's kind of what it makes me think of every time. But it is gorgeous. And the tone, again, just he really had his rig dialed in that jam. And, you know, it's funny, if you haven't seen it, you need to check it out. The next day, Trey did a whole rig rundown and he talks about every single thing that they went through. He's like, last night we jammed all over the place. I used this and this and this. So he goes through that. They released it on the Live Fish like the next day, and it's an amazing video. So, you know, he even knew the next day. He's like, man, I really went for a ride with this rig.
Yeah, they know it. They know it when it happens. And at the very end of this track, there's a beautiful segue right into the final hurrah.
Unbelievable segue. Incredible that the way they were able to take this jam, not make it abruptly end after 47 minutes, like to go into something. This was out of left field. Final Hurrah, I don't know if is this the second time. It was one of the first times they had played it. And the way they took something that had been so abstract, they haven't been used to playing, and floated into it. I mean, it was pure butter.
It's a perfect call, like you said. You know, it's out of left field, but it fits like a glove. My first thought, I wrote down that it's nice to see the band is still aware they're live at a concert. Mm-hmm. You know, it reached to go all the way back to the beginning of this conversation about the daily sound check. It seems like they rang that bell, that sure. They reached a point where they were so comfortable that the crowd didn't have to be there. Like, they could be themselves, the best version of themselves as musicians sure. And improvisers. And they hit it with Soul Planet. And I thought the whole set would be Soul Planet. I really did. But it should be noted that at the beginning of the final hurrah, they're still playing the same music that's at the end of the Soul Planet jam.
Yep. Those segues I love. I remember seeing, what was that? The Nellie Kane one. Was that San Nellie Kane at DCU in 2012 when they opened the whole tour with that? That's one of my favorite transitions because, again, like, Nellie Kane doesn't make any sense there. And that's a hard song to go into. So sure, there's a lot of songs that there's cool transitions, but a lot of them are easy to go into. The brilliance of this transition is how difficult that segue actually is.
Yeah.
And the seamlessness of it. So, you know, and then again, things I love. Let's just say you don't know anything that happened. You wake up the next morning. You don't know anything. You have your cup of coffee. Okay, Soul Planet, final hurrah. I could probably skip this show. That's probably not going to be that cool. Here I am.
Yeah, you're
almost
lost.
200 shows, 30 years later. This is the show I want to talk about.
My final note was at about 6 minutes and 50 seconds of the final hurrah, I wrote, this is heaven. Not this particular playing, but the whole vibe of what's being played. I tried really hard to close my eyes and picture myself maybe next to you and your friends.
Sure.
And just what would it be like to be there? And even though you very eloquently explained why you have attendance bias toward this, if you listen to this whole jam and all of the final hurrah that is subsequent, you could feel it. It's in your, at least for me, I don't want to tell anyone how to listen to Phish, but it could be a time travel machine. You could be there.
The way that I approached Phish and when I go to Phish, I like to zone out and let the brain stop moving for a couple of minutes.
Me too.
And the great Phish jams, your brain shuts off. And for 47 minutes, that pretty much happened. There's another kind of interesting story. My good buddy, Dustin, this dude dances like I've never seen anybody dance in my life. He is a ball of sweat when the show's over. He's crazy, hilarious. He was next to me on my other side. And at the end of the set, or the end of the song, or the end of the set, he said to me, he's like, Memo, he's like, I'm sorry, dude. I feel like I didn't bring the energy. I wasn't doing my normal thing. And I put my arm around him and I showed him, everybody in the crowd. I go, Dustin, it's not your fault. I go, when Fish is this good, you can't even move. And during that Soul Planet, in mega sections, during the computer part, during some of the incredible Bliss parts, nobody could dance because everyone's so locked in that moment that everyone is paralyzed. And it's happened a couple of times. It's literally the greatest feeling in Fish. You just paralyzed. Like those moments change everything. It's you go and there's 4 or 5 minutes sometimes, and you're lucky to catch that once a tour like that, where everyone is so locked in, nothing is happening. Like you can't even move. It's so good. You're just, your jaw is on the floor. And for 47 minutes, pretty much, I felt this way during Soul Planet.
Lon Memo, thank you for joining me today on Attendance Bias and doing our goddamn best to get to the heart of why we love this band so much. And these selections, Stash, Soul Planet, Into the Final Hurrah, from August 31st, 2021 at Shoreline. If those of you who are listening, if you made it to the end of this episode and you haven't heard this before, you know what you got to put on next. But again, Lon Memo, thank you for taking the time, because this did take time to get to the heart of this and break it down. Appreciate it so much.
I got to give you two quick things before we go.
Yeah.
I told you about the party house and the quiet house.
Yeah.
I was in the quiet house. I'm old. The minute the Soul Planet stopped, I screamed at everybody, I'm sleeping in the party house tonight. I was ready to roll after that. You see something like that and your energy level flies off the chart. The other thing is, you know what? I think it's important to be positive. And when that jam was over, I was screaming. I think that's the best jam I've ever seen. It was, has everything I've ever wanted in one Fish jam. And I think that if you're open-minded and you're a positive person and you love Fish, you should say things like that. If Fish plays something that is that awesome in front of you, and you're lucky enough to be one of the 15,000 people in the world at that moment, you better believe you should be singing from the rooftops how good that jam is. None of this, it was pretty cool, but it did this. No, no, no. Get that out of your head. That's stupid. Don't take opinions. You know when it's good, and the people that were there knew it, and sing it from the rooftops. That's my best advice. Those are the people you want to hang out with.
And that's it for today's chat with Lon Memo, but we can't get out of here yet. We have to double check our facts and figures with the Attendance Bias Fact Check.
Attendance Bias Fact Check.
First, in regards to playing in Japan, Memo recommends Ghost from June 15th, 2000 at Big Cat in Osaka. And I mentioned some Japanese festival appearances by Fish. I was off by a bit because those festival appearances were at the Fuji Rock Festival in Niigata on July 30th, 31st, and August 1st of 1999, a full year before his suggestion. Memo and I go deep into the Stash, and the question of when Stash was first played came up. For the record, Stash debuted on September 13th, 1990 at the Wetlands, a show that should be required listening for every Fish fan, as many fan favorites debuted that night. And finally, at the time of this recording, the Final Hurrah has been played 15 times, most recently at the Meadows in Hartford on July 24th, 2022. And that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank Lon Memo for joining me today, Fish.net for its help with the sound check, and Fish.in for the recording used in today's episode. If you enjoy Attendance Bias, please support the show by leaving a rating and a review of it on your favorite podcast app. You can also follow Attendance Bias on social media, mostly Instagram and Twitter. If you reach out, say hello and I'll send you a free sticker. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week on Attendance Bias.